Good morning, First UU. This first song is called Strand, and it's about DNA and music and the soul. A single strand, a filament of DNA, a fate, and where you land in arms of love or hate seems less decision than existential correlate. Reason, come find me. Like predator or prey, I'm bound in silk, gourmet waiting for jaws of clarity. A delicate dream, meaning prescribed of wish, past purview, and how you see what's defined as true. In waking or asleep depends on what you value. A logic, come save me. Vibrating in a quantum place, I'm lost in time and space. Breathing in to reality. Some universal design or dictate of my conscious mind, what guides destiny? Music of the soul vibrates these strands and streams of DNA. Thank you. Thank you. This song is called Can You Let It Go? you like your ride? Do you like your style? You've earned that sense of pride. Gone that extra mile. Burn some rubber. Leave the Joneses in the dust. Money is honey, and you're hooked on the taste. Can you let it go? Can you let it go? Feel some joy, feel some pain. Can you let it go? The mind is what holds on, but peace will let it go. Can you let it go? You like the way she kisses you. It feels so good. You like the way he holds you. Feels just like it should. You've waited so long for somewhere to belong. There's a craving in your soul for someone you think will make you whole. Can you let it go? Can you let it go? Feel some joy, feel some pain. Can you let them go? The mind is what holds on, but peace will let it go. Can you let it go? You have to be right. Can't stand to be wrong. You look back in the past and tally all the hurts. Keep a running list and remember who to blame. Measure your shame. Resentment is your drug of choice. Can you let it go? Can you let it go? Feel some joy, feel some pain. Can you let it go? The mind is what holds on, but peace will let it go. Can you let it go? It's always tomorrow. Singing that song tomorrow. Waiting for the next day. Maybe then you'll be okay. Living on a timeline, but never in the now. You set aside a store, only to find it's empty at your core. Can you let it go? Can you let it go? Feel some joy, feel some pain. Can you let it go? The mind is what holds on, but peace will let it go. Can you let it go?
Thank you so much. Would you all rise in body or spirit for our call to worship?
How will we be renewed in this moment? How will we be changed by this hour? How will we be transformed through this beloved community? Come, you longing, thirsty souls, and let us worship together. And may this flame, symbol of transformation since time began, fire our curiosity, strengthen our wills, and sustain our courage as we seek what is good within and without. Blessed be.
voices and hear the earth call. Feel the deep power of being in all. He will honor creation. Your vow, giving, receiving, as love shows us how.
Good morning. You can take your seats. I'm Catherine Probasco, and I'm happy to welcome all you radiant, transformed beings to First Unitarian today. Whether you're in the sanctuary or the fellowship hall or the family room, take a look around and send a welcome blessing to the people near you or far away. It is good to be together. If there are any kids here, we thank you for being here. If you get bored, we have an art table over there. If you need some room to jump and dance, the family room is across the hall with a live stream of the service. And if you just need to lie down on a soft rug with some colorful toys, we have the playground down here. A reminder that it is for children only. We do ask that you put your phones in worship mode. If you don't have your phone, it's probably the one that we found, and you can check at the welcome table. Louise is holding it for you. All are welcome here to learn and grow in spirit. We bring our whole selves into this holy moment, along with our questions, our doubts, and our sense of wonder. Come, let us worship together.
Still haven't gotten my glasses fixed. So the poem I'm about to share with you reminds me of our Unitarian Universalist seventh principle, that we covenant to affirm and promote respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. This idea of the interdependence of all is also a part of the Article 2 proposal now under review. And I'm not going to tell you too much about that. That's a whole service, and probably more than one. The elementary religious education class is going to begin this month's theme of transformation by examining change and learning that being open to change is fundamental to our Unitarian and Universalist heritages, never complete and never perfect. Understanding how complete our connection to every part of the web of existence is transformational. Everything is connected. And since you are a part of everything, you are connected to everything. You are connected to a human body, to hands and eyeballs, teeth, and toes, elbows, a butt, even a nose. What, there's no 14-year-olds here? You can laugh. To a heart and some lungs and a strange-looking stomach and a brain that's so smart, there's no peak it can't summit. But you're not just a body. You're bigger than that. You are connected to people, to everybody, to moms and to dads and sisters and brothers and uncles and cousins, grandfathers, grandmothers. You're connected to friends and to teachers at school, and even to people you don't think are cool. You're connected to people in Denver and Maine, in Paris and Baghdad, to strangers in Spain. You're connected to every human on Earth. Wow. And they're connected to you. You're also connected to hedgehogs and cats and dogs and squirrels and birds, rabbits and cows and deer by the herd and monkeys, tarantulas, dolphins and snakes. Friend, you're connected to every big, small, hairy, slimy, snuggly, scaly, floppy, flappy, bristly, buzzy, beautiful creature on Earth, even blobfish. If you don't know what a blobfish is, you have to Google it. Blobfish, you say? Surely not that. They don't look like me, talk like me, or act like me, and they probably stink. But you see, we're connected. We all play a part in life. We're the same. We're all blobfish at heart. Now, this next part, though bonkers, is true, I'm afraid. You are connected to everything humans have made. To toys and to playgrounds, books and chairs and gardens and medicine, language and prayers and buildings and bicycles, buses, balloons, hammers and paintbrushes, tractors and spoons, but also to chicken pox, bullies and lies, to greed and pollution and trash piled high. You're not just connected to things that you like, things that are comfortable, easy, or nice. As a human, you're part of the everythingness, and sometimes it's scary and a big, ugly mess. But the good news, my dears, is that you are quite powerful, a force that's in everything, timeless and wow-erful. You're even connected to things you can't see. The invisible world, for at least you and me, to cells, DNA, diseases, death, amoebas and gravity, atoms and breath, to hydrogen, nitrogen, nanobots too. You're connected to them, they're connected to you. You're connected to happy, you're connected to sad. The past and the future and thoughts that you've had, to pharaohs, Ben Franklin, T-Rex, ancient Greece, to love and poverty, hunger and peace, to Jesus and Buddha, Muhammad and Moses, to spaceships and aliens with noses like hoses. You're connected to all that has, will be, or has ever been. You're connected to this very moment where all things begin. For you are the sun and the moon and the stars, Venus and Jupiter, Neptune and Mars, comets and galaxies, voids and black holes, You are the universe, perfect and whole.
Spend a few moments connecting in meditation. Find a comfortable position in your seat. Let your breath settle. Going to start with Rosemary Traumer's poem, Gift, which invites us to experience the silence in a few moments. With our other awakened senses. And if all I can give you is silence, then let it be the most beautiful silence. A silence perfumed with mint and sage. A silence that brings a quiet shine to everything it touches. Let it be the kind of silence that opens into a deeper silence, the kind that knows golden petals and sunshine and the scent of rain unfolding in the meadow. A silence that holds you so lightly, the way candlelight might hold you inside the dark. May it find you in the morning, be waiting for you before you rise. May you find it behind and between every word you say, the way sky supports the dark cursive of starlings. And may you hear it, really hear it, the deep silence, like your favorite song playing over and over again. Let us continue together, held lightly in the breathing, rustling silence of our community.
There's a lot to carry today. Maybe today our hearts are heavy with some burdens. As a congregation, we journey together and we share the burdens. So at the sound of the chime, I invite you to share what's on your heart into our sanctuary. In addition to all these, we add these prayers of our community. We pray for Janice Schnelzer, whose son, Jason, passed last week. May Janice find consolation, and may light perpetual shine upon Jason. And we lift up Reverend Angela, who is marrying her partner, Chloe Cornyn, this afternoon. May their life together be filled with love and laughter. All these we lift up to the great powers of healing and renewal and celebration known by many names. Can we join our hearts in prayer? We grieve another week of violence against the innocents in Gaza, in Ukraine, in Yemen, across sub-Saharan Africa, in Haiti and Afghanistan, in Mexico and Venezuela. And we mourn for Next Benedict, a victim of transphobia in Oklahoma. And so we pray. For those who are fleeing, we wish them sanctuary. For those who are staying, we wish them safety. For those who are fighting, we wish them peace. For those whose hearts are breaking, we wish them comfort. For those who see no future, we wish them hope. And may we place love at the center of everything that we do. Blessed be, and peace be with you.
Hold on to your freedom, cherish the right to reason. If you don't use your brain, you'll surely lose your mind. So dance in the sun, read a good book, make some art, get back to the heart of something more. Love yourself, love someone else. Do no harm, make some peace and save the world. Let go of your worrying about the brand of shoes you'll buy. Are they cool? Do you look cool? Or are you just a fool? Caught up in a game of imitation fame. How can you get back to the heart of something more? Love yourself, love someone else. Do no harm, make some peace and save the world. Astronauts take pretty photographs of our bright blue ocean planet. Such an illusion, folding peacefully in space. It's filled with war and hate, pollution and careless waste. How can we get back to the heart of something more? Love yourself, love someone else. Do no harm, make some peace and save the world. It's not too late to change your fate. Give and get back to the heart. Love yourself, love someone else. Do no harm, make some peace and save the world.
Can you believe it's March? Holy cow. It's a new month, which means a new theological theme. This month, it's transformation. So next week, Reverend Angela will be preaching a sermon called Another Way is Possible, about lessons from two fathers, one Israeli, one Palestinian, who each lost daughters to the violence and who want us to know some important lessons. After that, I'll be preaching about the four-year anniversary of the pandemic. Can you believe it's 4 years? And all the ways that we were transformed, some of which I don't think we've acknowledged enough, and certainly some of which we've not mourned enough. Then Angela will be back with a sermon about a big decision that is facing Unitarian Universalism. And the decision is, should we transform our eight principles into a new kind of message? And that will be voted on at the General Assembly in June, so it's an important discussion. It's a huge moment in the life of our movement. And the last week is Easter Sunday. There'll be a sunrise celebration of Ostara, a pagan ritual that predates and informs the Christian holiday of Easter. That's at 7 a.m. for the bold of heart. And then Angela will preach about the transformative power of hope at 9 and 11. It's a really fun day, too, because there'll be the egg hunt and bake sale and all kinds of stuff going on. So a lot of transformation happening. And today, I want to talk big picture about the kinds of transformations that we face as humans, as part of nature, as a planet. It's clear that the systems we have set up to run our economies and our environment have failed terribly. Not a surprise. I remember when I was in college, I took a class on economics. And in that class, I was told that free market capitalism was the best way to run our economy because the free market automatically ensures that the things that we need will get produced in the most efficient way. We'll get the things we need in an efficient way. Well, have folks ever heard of White Claw? White Claw is a product that was created in 2016 because apparently the market demanded it. It is seltzer water and alcohol. Yes, it's just bubbly water and vodka. And they expect to sell almost $1 billion worth of White Claw this year. And apparently because the market demanded it, they decided to come out with a line of White Claw that is non-alcoholic, which I believe could also be called seltzer. But no, it'll be marketed and packaged as White Claw Zero and distributed and sold for $20 for a 12-pack. I looked it up on the Target website. That's the price. It really is, because the market demanded it. So I have some questions about the idea that the free market is the most efficient way to get things that we want. And I could go on to talk about more serious goods and services like insulin or home health care. The free market simply does not work. And not only does it not work, it's actively making people poorer and ransacking the precious resources of the planet on which we live. That's one dangerous idea about the economy. The other is that we must continue to grow, to produce more, to consume more, in order to improve everyone's quality of life. But the effects of growth as a fetish are just the opposite. So anyone who has worked for a publicly held company, and by that I mean a company that sells stock to the public, anyone who's worked for one of those kinds of companies knows that the entire focus of that company is on the next quarter's returns. Everything is about the price of the stock in 3 months. Very short-term vision, very little else matters. Constant growth. You may have heard the saying, constant growth is the philosophy of the cancer cell. But there is a movement that aims to counter this religion of constant growth, and it's simply called degrowth. Degrowth is the idea that instead of measuring annual growth in the dollar value of the products that are created in a country in a year, that's the judge of how you would judge an economy. The proposal for degrowth is that policymakers should focus on things like life expectancy, and that's for everybody, not just white men, and health and education and housing, people's well-being. The argument, which I agree with, is that there are plenty of resources right now for all of us to live well and with dignity, but currently the resources are distributed in unfair ways. This idea, like so many good ideas, began in the 1970s. If economies focused on less on things like non-alcoholic White Claw, they could use less of our dwindling resources and still be able to take care of everyone. Now, degrowth doesn't mean that we'll be living in caves or reading by candlelight. It just means that people, especially people in rich countries, would do things like live in smaller houses or change their diet or drive and travel less. And I think the piece about this being the work of people in rich countries is important because rich countries consume much more and are the source of much more of the causes of global warming, like consuming fossil fuels. And people in poorer countries, many poorer countries, still have a long way to go to having the standard of living well and with dignity. So people in those countries are not the ones who need to examine how much they consume. There are people who argue against degrowth, of course. Capitalism has its fans. They say that it's exactly this growth that has led to things that substantially improve the quality of life, like vaccines and, say, a type of rice that is disease-resistant and more productive. With that perspective, I think has had some truth to it. Although I wonder if we could have made those good things without all the waste and damage that came with the endless pursuit of more, more, more. And deeply intertwined with this idea of endless growth is colonialism. So for millennia, countries have sought to grow wealthier by extracting wealth from less powerful and developed countries. Modern colonialism began with the Industrial Revolution, and the colonizers needed raw materials for these new industries. They needed cheap labor, sometimes completely unpaid labor, kidnap labor. And they also needed a place to sell the products that the products of the Industrial Revolution, because suddenly they had the capacity to produce more than they needed to consume, and they needed to offload those goods somewhere. So off to the colonies they went, for the colonies to pay for. And there are also political and cultural reasons for colonization. The colonizers were competing geopolitically with the other colonizers, which made having the money from colonizing more important. And there were religious reasons, like bringing Christianity to new places, although I think that tended to be more of a cover for the obvious drive for wealth and power. And I think while we're talking about colonialism, that it's worth noting right now that in some ways New Mexico is a colony. Companies from far wealthier parts of the United States extract our resources. They take our oil and our gas and uranium. There's even a company called Niagara in Sandoval County that is taking water to put in bottles to sell, taking our precious water out, putting it in bottles and selling it. And now, these companies actually do pay for the resources they extract, but I would argue that New Mexico doesn't get near enough compensation for loss of our precious resources. In fact, this past legislative session, there was a bill to raise the royalties on the fossil fuel companies as they extract our precious mineral resources. And that would have been the first time since the 1970s that the royalties have been raised. The price of oil and gas to the extracting companies would have been raised since the 70s. But it did not pass, in part because in a colony, the political process is controlled by the colonizers. So we are, in some ways, a colony. No, and as an aside, is anyone here watching The Curse on Showtime? No? Oh, all right, right on, right. I want to strongly recommend that folks watch the series The Curse, which is on Showtime. It stars Nathan Fielder and Emma Stone as a couple of real estate developers in Española, New Mexico. And it's the show is about how they try to justify their effort to make money gentrifying the town. And it is really cringy. Have you ever cringed harder than watching the show? It's like an hour-long cringe, right? It is really cringy to watch these people with privilege rationalizing their greed and their narcissism, but it's so real, especially for folks in New Mexico. So I strongly recommend. It's a look into another part of our state. Anyways, I raise this all because as I was reading about degrowth, I was reminded of a book I was given by our last ministerial intern, Kristen Famula. Remember Kristen? So fabulous. The book is called Hospicing Modernity, It's by Vanessa Mercado de Oliveira. And honestly, I had not gotten around to reading it. I just put it on the stack when she gave it to me. But I did read it now, and it's great. And the book really broadens this conversation. When de Oliveira writes about modernity or modern society, she goes much farther and wider than our economic system. She writes about all of it, the whole enchilada. She talks about how modern society has created this enormous split between humanity and nature, and how humans now consider themselves separate from nature, but also the center of everything. And she talks about how modern society, in order to keep running, relies on denials. And let me list a few of the denials that we practice that she talks about. Denying the historic and ongoing violence required to keep modern society going and to keep some of us comfortable. Denying that our planet has limits and that the way we live now is unsustainable. Denying that we humans are not a part of an interconnected web of existence, and denial that the state of that web of existence has an impact upon us. Finally, denial that the problems we need to face together are both huge and complex. For too long, we have been like that person who throws themselves off a cliff, and as they're falling, they feel the wind in their face, and they say, "Hey, I'm flying." And as an aside here about this book, I was really charmed that the author spends at least 8 pages, I'm not kidding, explaining why some people should not bother reading her book based on their readiness to hear her views. And I find that honestly kind of refreshing. It's kind of like if I said, you know, some folks here should not bother listening to this sermon. Probably. Not present company, of course. Anyways, the book is intense, it's important. And her basic premise is that we need to acknowledge that modern society, as we know it, is dying, and that it's up to us to decide what we do in the run-up to this dying. De Oliveira says that we should take modern society to hospice. Now, I was a chaplain in the hospice wing of a hospital, and I think I get what she means. To be a good companion to someone who's in the sacred process of dying, we need to decenter our egos, and our general need to be the most important person in the room. We need to acknowledge that this modern way of being is no longer working. So just like when a human body has run its course and can no longer function, to keep a person alive longer than the body can endure does no good. It's a deep unkindness. And we cannot keep this modern society going alive longer when it cannot do more. And just like in hospice, we are good chaplains when we allow ourselves to be a little heartbroken for the patient and the family, but not so much that we can't function. We can't let ourselves be paralyzed in this moment. We need to keep on living and growing to meet and maybe even shape what's coming next. And like a hospice chaplain, we need to let go of trying to be right or correct or perfect. De Oliveira writes a lot about how one of the characteristics of modern society is the insistence on finding the one true answer. You know, the Enlightenment, when it happened, promised us that we could figure everything out, and that once we did that, we'd be all set, and then be final. And I think we're slowly learning now that, in fact, there are many ways to being and of being, and that two people can look at the same set of facts and agree on those facts and still have very different ideas about what they mean and what conclusions to draw from them. So there's a lot more in the book, and I do recommend that you check it out. It's called Hospicing Modernity. But the big message is to avoid repeating the same mistakes that got us into this mess. Don't make the same mistakes. I mean, the truth is, and I think most folks here know it, that we can address this crisis now, slowly and painfully, for sure, or we can kick the can down the road and address it later rapidly at a time we don't choose and much, much more painfully. And the question I'm asking myself is, am I ready to make the changes, make the sacrifices that we'll all have to make? Can I give up being able to eat every single vegetable and fruit that grows on all over the planet all year round because I can get it at Whole Foods? Am I willing to travel less? How many clothes are enough for my purposes? And the hard part for me is deciding what is actually enough to live on when I've never had to find out before. I've always lived in a way that if I really wanted something to make me feel secure or make me feel comfortable or to entertain me, if I wanted it, I just got it. I mean, within limits, obviously, but I just got it, and I did not give much thought to the consequences. I'm very much in the bubble of being a citizen of the United States in the 21st century. If I wanted something, I just got it, within limits. And I do think there are helpful stories about this transition to be found in books and movies. I'm reading Station 11 right now, which is about living in a post-disaster world that doesn't have electricity or water and the like. And there are also like a ton of other books and movies that speculate on what might happen when this all falls apart, this thing we're in all falls apart. And I find those books interesting, but when I look at the gap of living without electricity and water, and I look at my dishwashing machine, I feel like I don't understand how to go from here to there. Like, what's in between? So the process of living with less, I think, is hard to navigate, and I think there's more. De Oliveira writes that our work doesn't just stop at hospicing the modern world as it dies. We also have another role. We have a role of birthing a new way. We need to be midwives to a new world. And De Oliveira cites the work of Douglas Hine, who has a list of things that might be worth doing in a time of endings. As things are ending, what would be worth doing? What should we be doing now? And Hines writes, saving things that are worth saving and that can be saved. What can we still hold on to? Mourning the good things that must be left behind regardless, and bringing their stories with us. What do we need to let go of, even if it's innately good? Noticing the things that have been highly valued, but that no longer serve us and that we should walk away from. We used to love this thing, but now we need to let it go. Remembering that what is ending, what this thing that is ending, modernity, was at the beginning of something else that ended prior to that. So, and then looking for the lessons that we need for this moment about that transition for our current moment. So the Industrial Revolution brought us to this moment, the end of modernity. But what does the birth of the Industrial Revolution and the end of the agrarian age have to teach us about this moment? What lessons can we learn from that massive rupture? I've been talking about really huge shifts in society, and I've been mostly really vague about how we're supposed to deal with this moment. I'm big on questions here and thin on answers. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church. And it was, frankly, tempting to me to just skip this topic entirely because it's too hard and it's too big. But if we're not going to talk about big things or things that are difficult in this church, where will we? So I wish I had simple answers for everyone here, but perhaps the pursuit of simple answers is part of why we're in this situation. So instead of that, I'm going to leave you with a portion of a poem that's at the very end of De Oliveira's book. In the poem, she's asking us at this time of change to become intimate with all that this moment entails. We're asked to become intimate with all that this moment entails. And here's the last stanza of this long poem. Intimacies with growth and decay, pain and bliss, life and death, awe and horror, cruelty and kindness, health and sickness, trust and doubt, loyalty and betrayal, chaos and order, attraction and disgust, turbulence and zen, fear and faith, love and indifference, without guarantees. That's the end of the poem. It is indeed a very tall order for us to be intimate with all of that. But perhaps that's what's required to be fully present in this huge moment and maybe shape a better moment that's coming next. And so my prayer for this church is, may we be equal to it, and may we support each other in this work. Blessed be.
We have a new Change for the Future partner this week. I'll run through the end of May. It is United Voices for Newcomer Rights. Newcomers is an inclusive, non-stigmatizing term encompassing refugees, immigrants, asylum seekers, and other migrant groups. UVNR seeks to improve the lives of newcomers by providing direct support services, as well as working towards systemic change to build more welcoming communities. Arizona's inaugural poet laureate Alberto Rios mused on the power of welcome and giving in his poem, "When Giving is All We Have," which reads in part, "We give because someone gave to us. We give because nobody gave to us. We give because giving has changed us. We give because giving could have changed us. Giving is first and every time, hand to hand, mine to yours, yours to mine." We will now gratefully accept the offering.
You got some power in this world. You got some power in this world. You can use it for good or stay quiet and contrite. But you got some power in this world. You may not know the power of your power. It's a butterfly effect. Gentle wings are flying, and storms are rising. Well, you got some power in this world. You got some power to change the world. Random acts of kindness are a superpower that can change the world. Muhammad, Buddha, Jesus too. Truces in the trenches, lessons from Pooh. Pay it forward in the drive-thru. Anytime you choose love in the face of hate, you got some power in this world. You got some power to change the world. You can use it for good or stay quiet and contrite, but you got some power. Gentle winds are flying, and storms are rising. Well, you got some power in this world. You got some power to change the world. Random acts of courage are a superpower that can change the world. Tank Man and Tiananmen and Harriet Tubman, Joan of Arc, Rosa Parks, Desmond Knobs, Anne Frank, Mandela. Anytime you choose love in the face of fear, you got some power in this world. You got some power to change the world. You can use it for good or stay quiet and contrite, but you got some power in this world. You may not know the power of your power. It's a butterfly effect. Gentle wings are flying, and storms are rising. Well, you got some power in this world. You got some power to change the world. courage and kindness can change the world. Acts of courage and kindness can change the world. Anytime you choose love in the face of fear or hate, random acts of courage and kindness can change the world. Random acts of courage and kindness can change the world. The power of your power, it's a butterfly effect. Gentle wings are flying, and storms are rising. Gentle wings are flying, and storms are rising. Well, you got some power in this world. You got some power to change the world.
What is generously given is received with gratitude. Thank you on behalf of First Unitarian and United Voices for Newcomers. We have invitations.
We do. You are invited to join other folks from First U at Theology on Tap tomorrow night. That'll be March 4th at 7 p.m. at O'Neill's Pub, the one on Central. The setting is informal, but the conversation is deep. We'll be exploring and discussing a quote from Mary Oliver about the similarities and differences between faith and hope in dark and uncertain times.
And you are invited next Sunday at 1 p.m. when we'll host our second speaker on the Israel-Gaza war. Amit Sadan is a postdoctoral fellow in the International Studies Institute at UNM. This talk will review formative moments in the history of the conflict and offer some historical context. And there's more info in your order of service.
Looking ahead to April, everyone is invited to see the band Sol y Canto in concert Saturday, April 20th at 7 p.m. They play bilingual folk and jazz. It's very family friendly, and it's a fundraiser for our ESL and after school tutoring programs.
And you are invited to come and grieve and discuss and honor Nex Benedict's life at a community vigil. We just prayed for Nex. That community vigil will be held tonight at 5:30 at Morningside Park. 5:30, Morningside Park.
Finally, everyone is invited to join the young adults this afternoon. They are working in the South Garden, which is behind the RE building, starting today at 1:30. Everyone is welcome.
And you know, if you can't make it today and you've got a hankering to clean up the campus, we're doing a campus cleanup next Saturday at 9 a.m. All are welcome for that. So this afternoon and then next Saturday at 9 a.m. You know, we typically offer a conversation question for folks to mull on. I think today let's have the question be, what would be a challenge for you to give up or sacrifice as we make this change? What would be hard for you to give up as modern society ends? That's a cheerful topic, huh? All right, if you're a visitor here, we're so happy to have you. We're not gonna make you identify yourself. We decided to stop torturing people. but we are so glad that you're here. Check out the welcome table if you'd like more information, or come talk to me. We're happy that you're here. And I invite everyone to rise in body or spirit to offer a greeting, hand on your heart, other hand out to our companions on the journey, the people we share the burdens with. Blessed be. And please remain standing for our final hymn.
Blue Boat Home, which is number 1064 in the Blue Hymnal. Thank you.
In peace and practice radical love.
Thank you.